Hello, Sugars. On this week's Dear Maddie, we have really funny lady and also really smart lady and author Holly Kaplan. And she wrote a book called Surviving the Dick Click. And I loved having her on, and what I loved about this book is that it's really just a very practical, funny, kind of very down-to-earth book that talks about a lot about, with all this Me Too movement, just there's still women that are some office spaces have changed, and sadly, some have not. They're just not, and hopefully they will change. But it's, you know, how do we support these women and men that are in these places of not the best office situations, and sometimes can't get out of those situations, or maybe can't change the office narrative that's going on right now. And so we talk a bit about that, but because it's me and it's Holly, we're kind of like two little Southern sisters just gabbing it up as well. So I hope this is enlightening to you. I hope that you're interested in the book, Surviving the Dick Click. If so, let me know. Tweet me. Let me know what you think about this episode. And Sugars, enjoy Miss Holly Kaplan.
Record this shit.
We just fucking recorded. Thank you.
We're talking it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Dear Maddie Show. This is Matt Maher. I'm really excited about this show.
Yay!
I'm so glad we did it in person. I'm with Holly Kaplan, author of Surviving the Dick Click.
You got it.
Surviving the Dick Click. And so Holly, we were supposed to do like a Skype thing. It didn't work out. And she said, by the way, I'm going to be in LA. And you just popped off the plane at LAX and came over.
It was perfect timing.
Sugar, we are two Southern ladies.
Yes, we are. And we're not far apart. Ardmore and Dallas are not far apart.
You're not a Texas girl. You're from Texas, but you're a New Orleans girl. New Orleans.
You bet.
Which basically Holly got here like an hour and a half ago, you guys.
Yeah, I did.
And we've just been chatting. And then we're like, oh, we need to press record or this shit's never going to happen. So thank you again for being here. I appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here. It was perfect timing. I felt it would be more fun to do it face-to-face.
It is. It's a beautiful day in LA. And I'm not far from where you're staying.
No,
so
it's easy. It worked out.
It's easy. It did. It worked out. Now, the reason I wanted to have you on the show is because what you're book is about, and what I've gleaned from you from like social media and stuff like that. I'm not gonna read your bio. Sorry, I don't do that on my show.
That's okay.
Because it's boring. I'd rather you talk about your bio.
Okay.
So all the stuff that's in, but you have been featured, just for people to know. So you wrote this book. When did you write the book?
I started writing the book about 6 or 7 years ago, and I just finished it because I had enough time a year ago. And then I had it published.
Oh.
Yes.
And so, which, boy, I mean, not to make light, but timing kind of is everything.
Timing is everything. Who knew Harvey Weinstein was going to happen?
Who knew?
No idea. Book came out a month later, Harvey Weinstein. Boom. Who knew?
Wow.
Validated everything.
And we're still seeing the ramifications. I don't think we're done yet. So the Fool Tolerance Surviving the Dick Click, but it's Surviving the Dick Click, A Girl's Guide to Surviving the Male Dominated Corporate World.
Yep.
And that's why I wanted to have you on because of the book, but also too, I kind of started talking about this earlier, you guys, really like 5 times I've said, we can't talk about this now, Holly, we got to wait for the show. So I feel like as a white man, and yeah, I'm big old homo, but still as a white man, like when Black Lives Matter happened, obviously people that know listen to this show, my boyfriend's African-American. So, and even before I met my boyfriend, I would have been a very big, you know, supporter of Black Lives Matter, but it's even more personal now. But, you know, I told him I originally wanted to do a couple like podcasts about Black Lives Matter, and I didn't do it because I was nervous about what would happen if
if I said something out of curiosity, like legitimate questioning or whatever,
right,
and I offended someone who is black because I'm not black. And so I feel like that's kind of the same thing now, too, where I feel like a lot of straight and gay men, as a gay man, I'm very much like, even though I'm not going to have sex with women, never have, never will, platinum gay, but I love your hair and I like your makeup and you smell nice. And I love your sass, ladies, but not going to happen. I mean, whoo, I'm a platinum gay. Do you know what that is, a platinum gay?
I'm learning right now.
Do you know what a gold star gay is?
No, but you should explain this to me.
A gold star gay is a gay who's never had sex with a woman ever.
Okay.
A platinum gay is a gay who's never even been near a vagina.
Oh.
Meaning my mother had a C-section.
Oh, you so really haven't.
I'm then. So gay, I literally was like, I'm not going there, Mom.
No, you weren't. You were going to come out the other way.
Mm-mm, not going to do it.
That was your destiny.
That was my destiny. It was. So that's a platinum gay.
Yeah.
But still, that said, I'm scared as fuck with Me Too. And I'm kind of, I feel like, and I'm, so what I'm hoping to get out of this conversation are for my female listeners and my male listeners of the show, of just like, how do we kind of navigate this now that everything has changed, you know? Would you have written anything differently in your book before, after, so you feel like you got it all out?
Not a single bit. I wouldn't have changed a thing.
So let's talk a little bit about, again, because you are not, talk a little bit like how you got inspired to do this and how it came about for you.
Like I was telling you in your kitchen
a couple of minutes ago. Yeah, she was telling me my kitchen, and kitchen, I was like, save it.
Because we were looking at the Wonder Woman paraphernalia.
Yeah, it's true.
And the bar. In the bar.
Girl, we can have a drink after
we
this.
We might have to do that. Yeah, Gosh, I've been in the medical device industry for 20-something years. I'm dating myself by saying that.
That's all right. You started when you were 10.
I did. I was only 10. Young and spry.
You and Doogie Howser.
Yes, exactly. And it's medical device is a heavily male-dominated field. It just is. It always has been. What we do, the reps do, is we go into the operating room with the doctors, and we tell them how to use our device.
Oh, you've been in an operating room?
Oh, yeah. We do it all the time.
So you've seen like open bodies and all that?
Oh, yeah. And they say, Holly, what do I do with your device? How do I use it? So even though I partied my ass off at LSU for 6 years in undergrad, they're still asking me what to do, which is really scary.
LSU is a big party school.
LSU is a big party school. But somehow,
Tigers, right?
Tigers. Such fun football games there. But so it's still a male-dominated field. You don't see a lot of women in medical device. And somehow I got in, somehow I did well, and then I became a manager in 2007 in this industry. And all of my male colleagues, well, they were men if they were male colleagues that were managers, were it was all men. The reps were men. I was running a male team, and no one could have prepared me for this environment. No one could have prepared me because I'm thinking, I'm going into this like I'm their sister. Like, they're going to like me regardless. I've known these guys for years. I can hang tough with these guys. Well, come to find out, I did have some that I could hang with, but it turns out that there was more of a bullying type of system when I got into management that I was not familiar with.
Really?
Big time. And as women, you know, I go into a meeting, I'm like, what can we do as a group to do X, Y, Z? What can we do collaboratively, you know, to make ourselves better, or whatever the issue is with the boys club and medical device, it was, who are we going to fire this week? Hey, why don't we put everyone's name up on the board and rank everyone?
Literally? Really?
Oh, yeah. And
wait, rank them by job or by looks?
Anything you want to. Not looks, but like, well, what do we think about Matt's performance? What do we think about Holly's performance? Where would we stack rank them? And I guess
like a fucking competition.
It's a competition. So, like I say in the book, the measuring stick is out. They're literally measuring each other's penises to see who's the coolest, who can be the biggest bully. And I didn't know what to do with that. And I'm thinking, I guess I have to act like this to survive in it. Hence the name of the title, Surviving a Dick Click. Because in the book, I talk about how I became a dick. So I was a manager for 10 years. I had a very successful team. I had mostly men on my team. I hired men and women. I brought more women into the organization, which I was criticized for. But after years of this, I thought, I got to start writing about this shit because I have to tell other women who come up behind me how to handle this, because no one told me how to handle this. Not
Did your mother work or your aunt? But, or
yeah, yep, they did, but they were still not male-dominated fields, and I felt like it really had not been discussed. So I started taking notes and writing down my experiences, and I'm like, I'm going to write about this. I'm going to write a chapter about that. I'm going to tell them what to do and what not to do, them being successors.
Well, and because I think, look, we all want it to be a safe place for women everywhere. And it's finally getting to a point now
yeah.
that if a woman says something, there are repercussions for
oh.
people and things change. But this is happening a lot in California. This is happening a lot in New York. I don't know if this is happening still a lot in places in the South, maybe some places that are more conservatives. So what I like about what you're saying is that it's almost like a harm reduction model.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like sometimes when you're working with people that are addicted to drugs and you say, you got to stop drinking. You have to stop drinking. And they're going to say, well, I can't stop drinking. That's not an option right now. So it's like, okay, well, how do we make you safer in this
right.
environment when you don't necessarily have the option of quitting cold turkey? Because, and I want to say that for some women out there, they don't, it's like for some queer people, they'll say, oh, well, I want to come out. And I'll say, and I'll talk to them about their situation in their life. And sometimes it's not safe for them to even come out.
Right,
and
right.
And so it's like, how do we deal with this? So is that a lot in the book of like how you survive this?
Yeah.
If necessarily, not that, you know, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was a process.
Yeah.
It was a process.
Sometimes
it's
it
not,
can't change for people overnight.
It's not going to change for
I hope
people
it
overnight.
Is, but it's not for some.
But to your point, there are many different levels because, I mean, to talk about my issues with HR at that company with being bullied was difficult. And I was dealing with women and they didn't believe me.
Really?
And they didn't like it. And when I said so-and-so needs sensitivity training because these are my documented problems, I would typically get blown off. So it wasn't a safe space.
So you did, so quote unquote, the right
oh,
thing.
Oh yeah, I did. Because
and were
my,
turned down even by other women.
I was turned down by other women. And in another point in my career, I was dealing with a bully manager and she said, Holly, you realize he's a well-respected manager. He's been here for years and you're not going to win this. And I'm like, I didn't know this was a competition. So it's a common theme. And to your point, it's baby steps. It's baby steps because we have to break through the different barriers for everyone to understand what we need to accomplish mm-hmm. because not everybody understands.
Mm-hmm. No, not everybody understands. I think they're starting to more now. But again, it's like, we hear about the Harvey Weinsteins,
yeah.
about this horrible, horrible behavior. So it's like, well, because there's some men who might think of like, of rating people this way. They don't see that as oppression. They
no.
don't see that as it, because it's not this black and white.
Right.
I'm trying to fuck you on my couch.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's different. It's just different. So can you talk a little bit about that, like about ways that you felt like that you experienced discrimination or bullying that are kind of that you feel like a lot of other women experienced
I did, yeah.
that we don't think about?
Yeah, totally, totally. You know, when you're in your career, you change managers several different times, especially if we're at the same company for a while. And
mm-hmm.
One thing I really did notice consistently from manager to manager, mm-hmm. and they were all men.
Mm-hmm.
Not there's anything wrong with men. I love men. This is just my experience.
Girl, I love men too.
I know.
I do.
I know. I can tell by your boyfriend. He's very handsome.
Yeah, he is handsome.
Anyway. Yeah.
Sorry, Gay DD.
Gay DD. Yeah.
I'll get you off yep. the topic. So anyway.
Looking at a cute picture of you guys.
I know. So bullying.
Bullying, yeah.
Like that you experience at work that a lot of women.
Right,
yeah.
right. Exactly. So if I tried to assert myself,
mm-hmm.
being the only female on the team, if let's say a project came up,
mm-hmm.
they wanted us to do something with our sales reps,
mm-hmm.
and a message went out from my manager to my other colleagues,
mm-hmm.
and I offered, you know, to help and lead on the project and say, look, Bob, I can do this. I'd like to lead on this project. I typically would not hear back from him. And if and when I did, it came on a group text saying that the role had been given to Steve or to Jim. And that was a common theme. I was always left at the bottom, despite my accolades or despite my award-winning team members or being Region of the Year. It didn't matter. My voice was not as strong. And I just kind of got used to it. And it was very, you can start to implode on yourself because you begin to second guess everything. So that's the, everything that you do, you second guess your talent. So that's kind of like the after effect of having that happen for years and years.
Do you, do you think there's generational things as well? I mean, do you feel like that, I want to talk a little bit about with women, kind of oppressing other women, or do you feel like that's, do you feel like the younger generations are doing that in workforces, or do you think it's something they, women kind of learn that they kind of come in wanting to be all, let's support other women, and that kind of, like you were saying, you became a dick to survive,
right?
Like, and so do you think that is just how, I've never heard somebody saying, you know, say that before. When I think about, like, I feel like that's what I love the movie, like Wonder Woman. I think it's such a, did you see Wonder Woman?
Oh yeah, of course.
But I love that it's a message of feminism, that you don't have to be, like, a lot of times people would, we're going to revamp Wonder Woman, and they would make her literally, like, I mean, there's this one comic, and I hated this comic, and it shows Wonder Woman grabbing another guy's nuts and saying, respect me. And it was so, and not that there's anything, well, I do think there's something wrong, because she's literally grabbing a guy's nuts.
Yeah.
But they would make her this kind of quote-unquote bitch, and that was power. That was to be aggressive, to act like
a man.
But
that's not, that's...
And some women act like that, and that's fine. But this, like, quote-unquote softness, that's what I love about that movie, that it recognizes that love is a strength and soft.
It did.
So is it just those, I don't want to say values that are typically, that are just men or just women. It's like when people say, oh, he has a maternal instinct. I'm like, no, he's paternal. He has a fatherly instinct. Our culture just doesn't celebrate that. So what am I?
Sadly.
This is a long, yeah. It's the longest fucking way to get to a question. I'm like, Jesus, help me.
Sorry.
But it's me. My question is, what values do you think women uphold or want to bring to the workforce that often does not get supported in a male-dominated workforce?
I think, to go back to what you were saying earlier about age differences, I think the women of my age group, I hate to say that, I was born in 1970, but perhaps did not support each other very well. Maybe we didn't know how. And we didn't know how to speak up about things, which I think we're sadly getting better at now, just now. Like, I'm just now getting better. I try to get better every day, especially for my daughter, so she knows what to do. But the women coming up behind us, our successors, who are millennials, are more vocal. And I think they will support each other more, especially because of what's happened. I think we will see a change. I think we'll see a change, and I'm hopeful it'll go in the right direction.
I mean, I hope so. I mean, we're seeing it with the Me Too. And I love that, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but the two women that started, which is a white and African-American woman that started the Women's March.
Yeah.
Are actually working now with the students in Florida, because they said, hey, you started this campaign, and you've got to actually organize.
Yeah.
And you can't just, you know, walk along the street and protest. And so, again, it's like, you didn't see any men jumping in to do that. You literally see women literally supporting the children.
Right, right.
Not to dig on men. I love men. Men do a lot. Sorry.
We love men. Men are great.
But I do feel like women have, and so it's interesting that you said that in a workplace, because honestly, I never thought about that. I never thought about when it's just, it's so, when you are a minority, I'm just that way. Like, if I know somebody else is in my office is gay identified or something like that, I immediately want to help them, because I feel like I know what it's like to go through what they go.
Right.
So I just assume that all women would do that for other women. And it's not, but then it's like chicken or the egg. Yeah, it's probably some of the women's fault, but it's also, she's also probably trying to do the best that she can.
Right. There's all that, there's that level of being competitive.
Yeah.
And women are very competitive with each other.
Yeah, they are. So do you feel like, so what has, and so you're still a manager, right?
I No, I'm not. I went back to being a sales rep. I went to a small startup, which I'm having a really good time with. So I'm not managing people right now.
Oh, good, 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 good.
Yes, so I get a little breather.
So if you, let's say you did go to managing again, what would change?
That, I love that question. No one has asked me that.
Oh.
And I love that question because I think about that a lot because I've had time to do reflecting after writing the book and then changing roles, going back into sales. And then this whole Me Too thing. I love that question. I think I honestly would be a better manager. I do, because I think I'd be more sensitive to my reps' needs. The bullying me would not be a part of the equation. I'm much more compassionate. And I would speak up more. I would speak up against my management, not against, but be more involved. Mm-hmm. And I would support my reps more and speak more on their behalf. I would be more protective of my people. Mm-hmm. And I would verbalize more of my feelings to my higher ups, which I didn't do enough before.
Mm. Well, again,
I think I'd be a better manager now.
Because you tried.
Right.
And you were stifled.
Yes.
Which is what really, because I think a lot of it, it's a catch-22 is we tell people, speak up. And then they speak up and they're not heard or they're
they
not
get
only
slapped
not heard,
in the face.
Yeah. So what?
So you stop speaking up because you're like, what's the point of me speaking up if they're just going to say, well, that's wrong or that's not how we do things or I can't believe you said that. You're like, why should I say anything in the first place?
Exactly. And we're going to talk about some lighter topics too, but I'm still so interested in what advice do you give someone? Because I've had people, I don't have any questions on the show today, y'all, because y'all didn't write any in for this week, but also... I've had these questions before about work, and so I just kind of felt like Holly and I were going to cover it all. But if you do have questions, you can always tweet me at TheMattMar, two T's, two R's. You can tag Holly as well. I think I'll be sure to put – what's your Twitter again? Do you remember? It's fine. I'll put it up. Holly has to look it up. It's Dick Click something.
Dick Click Survival.
It's Dick Click Survival.
Dick Click Survival.
With Q-U.
Q-U.
Click. It's click, get it, y'all. It's French, not like click on your porn computer.
Right, exactly. That's a different talk show.
Yeah, it's a different show, which is fun to have. So the question, though, for me was, so for that girl, woman, that has tried to speak up,
yeah,
and is still not heard.
Right.
What does she do?
She has to do a couple of things. First, she has to find an alliance. In her group of peers, you have to have support. You have to have your bystanders that are going to help you and speak on your behalf.
So coworkers.
Coworkers,
or...
you bet. Because you can find so much support in that. And I think that's going to help change the tide some in these female relationships too. I'm already feeling that happen. We really rely on each other because we know this is what we have to change. Mm. And then in addition, you have to find an ally in HR, which can be hard, but you have to find someone who's going to be on your side in the HR department and make sure that you are heard. And if you're not, you know what? You go higher. You can't be afraid to go higher.
Mm.
Go to that person's director. Mm-hmm. Go higher. And I wish I would have gone higher in so many situations, and I just let it sit, whatever my situation was, which was usually based on gender discrimination. I just let it sit.
Mm.
So you have to be vocal, find your allies, and go high in HR.
Damn, y'all. Mic drop. Holly Kaplan just laid it down. I know. I love it. Okay. So you've done a lot. You like, you were talking about earlier, but I'm looking here like you've been in Entrepreneur. You've been in Cosmo. You've been in Cheddar. Like, so like, has you seen like what, I feel like, again, a reason why I have you on, I feel like people are craving this information because basically none of us know what the fuck to do.
No.
And we're scared. And so I kind of want to get into topics because an interesting take that I think you take is that I think a lot of people are like, well, you don't flirt at work. You don't do this at work. You don't do all these things at work. And as a therapist and as a, you know, as a psychologist, I think, but people are human.
Oh, God.
And we're attracted to our coworkers and things. So I feel like, but it brings up this gray area. So like, I mean, just like office flirting is huge. That happens all the time. Like, so how do you, is office flirting possible after Me Too?
For right now, I'm going to have to give that a no.
I think the no too.
I think it's a no. And
too soon. Hashtag too soon.
Hashtag too soon, y'all. We could put y'all on the end. Flirting is fun. Look, flirting makes you feel desired, sexy. It makes you feel good about yourself. I mean, flirting creates really good feelings. But I think for right now, we have to take it out of the workplace for two reasons. One, well, because of women and where we are with all this, and we really have to be, you know, hyper aware of our surroundings and, you know, and of light of everything that's occurred. And secondly, for men, because men are nervous too. I've talked to some men and they're afraid to even just hug their female colleagues, maybe colleagues they've known for years. They know each other's families, but they don't know what the boundaries are now. So right now we have to have a really hard boundary until we figure this shit out.
And I think we're scared too as men of, I honestly, and this would be with a woman or even a man, if I had a coworker that I was attracted to and even seemed to reciprocate that, I would worry that what if, let's say, I hit on them or we even went on a date, and what if they decided that they just wanted to ruin my career and just say...
That's scary.
I feel like, and it's fine, I get it. I feel like right now we are finally on the side of the person that's been victimized. But also, there's not kind of a due process right now. There's not. Let's actually. It's definitely you are guilty before proven innocent.
That is true.
And I understand why that's happening in the culture. I get that because there's been so much of you are never guilty ever. So it's like, what do you do if, like, what if you do if you're a man or a female and you do have a crush on someone in your office,
right?
And you feel like it's maybe mutual or maybe you even want to ask them out.
Right.
A, do you do that? And B, how?
I think you can. And the reason why I say that is because 42% of people admitted to dating somebody from their office.
That's where you spend all your time.
That's where we spend our time. That's where we meet our mates. It's where I'd met my husband, is at work.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So, I think it's common. And 16% of those people get married. So, it's a great place to meet your spouse. You know,
oh,
it's
wow.
a good place. But my thought on this here, and this is how I had actually done it a million years ago, was we took it out of the office. Like, we knew there was a mutual interest.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we took it out of the office and got to know each other outside of the fluorescent lighting and the cubicles so that you knew you had something else in common, you know, that you could get to know each other better. And I think that's totally fine. I think the hard part about that is respecting each other. So if your relationship goes awry, and not sell each other out. You know, but I'd say take it out of the office and then keep it out of the office if you can.
So how do you, because some people need baby steps, Holly. So how do you even take it out of the office? Like, what kind of, like, give me an example, what would you say or what would you do?
I would ask if they wanted to go to Starbucks on a Saturday afternoon at 2:00. You know, do something that's removed and something that's on the weekend.
Not even after work or not even during lunch, but literally the weekend, like, get it as far away from work as you can.
That's what I would do. Because that way you also escape your colleagues saying, hey, where are Holly and Matt going? You know, why are they going to lunch? Take it out of that completely. And then companies are actually reinstating something called a love contract. Have you heard of this yet?
No.
A love contract. Yes, they're having to look at it again because of this whole Me Too thing. Let's say I get involved with someone in my office and we're both in sales. We could go to HR and say, hey, look, we've been in a relationship for 90 days and this is getting pretty serious and we want you guys to know. Mm-hmm. They're like, great, let's do this love contract. And what this does is that this protects both parties. It protects the company and it protects the employees. And what the company can do is take whoever I'm dating and put him into maybe marketing, maybe a different department so that there's no conflict of interest.
Oh, they would literally move them?
They can move you. So if you want to stay in your relationship, that way you're protected and the other employees can't say, well, he gave that to Holly because she's his girlfriend. There are different layers to it. And it protects the company because if something bad were to happen and they'd say, well, Holly and so-and-so had this big blow up, they're dating. They're like, we didn't even know. We had no idea. So it gives complete transparency to the relationship. Southwest Airlines does it.
Really?
And they have a high marriage rate. It works for them.
Really?
It's a complicated thing because...
Southwest is a great company
to work for. It's a great company. But it's kind of complicated. You have to be really brave to come forward and say, I'm entering a relationship with this person. Because there's no guarantee it's going to work out.
Exactly.
But companies are, from what I understand, are trying to be more accommodating to that so they can make it more comfortable for the couple.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, a love contract.
Love contract.
Who, wow. Okay, so with office romance, like, so let's say you're in a consensual, you know, you're in a relationship, like, so a two parties consensual relationship. Every, hey, you know, we're having fun. You know, you've done the love contract or whatever. Is that relationship, are those different now after Me Too? Like, have those rules changed? Or should they change?
I'm confused.
What? Well, my question's confusing? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm confused.
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Roll with it. I don't edit. So sometimes I'm a fucking terrible host, y'all.
No, you're not.
So my question is, with office romance rules,
yes,
do they need to be changed?
Depends on what the rules are. Are there rules?
Well, okay, so let me say this. Yeah. First of all, if you're working in an office and there are not rules for office romance, A, is that bad?
I think that can be bad.
And what are you think some helpful rules people could instate in their office, or if you're in an office relationship, for somebody to follow?
That, I like that
is
point.
Is that clear?
That is clear. That okay. is clear.
I got there.
No, thank you. I've actually been talking about this because, like we said, people meet at work. They meet at work. There are companies that will have rules in place. Like, if you're a manager, you can't date me. And if you date me, you are terminated. They will put structure in place that if you don't abide by it, that there will be termination.
Because I get that they're looking at a person of power over somebody else, that someone could always say they felt like they had to date that person.
Right. It's safer to not even engage. So,
okay. Sorry, there's a big fire around somebody. We hope they're all okay. We live in Los Angeles.
Here.
All right, continue. So, manager, they can't even. What other type of. So, if somebody's crushing on their manager, probably that's not going to happen.
That's probably not going to happen.
So,
his or her job could be in trouble if it were to happen because it would be against company policy. And the company I'm with now actually has that in place. To prevent that from happening.
Did they do love contracts there?
No, we're very small.
Oh, so?
We don't at my company, no.
What other, any other office rules do you think that needs to change? What about somebody, let's say somebody that's in a relationship at work, because I feel like a lot of companies, they're not even on the game field of this. Maybe Me Too is making it better that they're thinking about this kind of thing.
Right.
But I feel like do more offices have rules about relationships or not? I would feel like they wouldn't. Or are most offices pretty good about this?
I can't speak to that. I'm not sure about how most.
Because I feel like they're not.
Just from my experience, it's
so like.
I don't think they know what to do.
So what is like if somebody's in a relationship at work and they just want to be like good people as far as like and setting good examples and they don't necessarily, you know, what are some like if you were dating your boyfriend in your office and y'all both even worked in the same department, but your office kind of seemed to give no shit. They were like, that's great. That's fine. But they're still also weren't. They were like the cool parent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, hey, that's
you can come
fine.
Drink at our house.
Yeah, come drink here. That's
you
fine.
Want a cigarette?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Sure. Smoke out. Just smoke out here.
Smoke out here.
Give me your keys.
Right.
So, which works for
Here's
a lot of people.
Here's a condom. Have a nice day.
Yeah, have a nice day. What are rules that are some guidelines that like people could self-impose on themselves if their job isn't doing it?
I love that question.
Good.
Two things.
Yeah.
Gossip. Everybody loves office gossip.
Love it. Oh, man.
Love
I was
it.
About as bigots gossip in seventh grade for a reason, y'all. Oh,
there you go.
I got better.
Yeah. See, when you're in a relationship in your office, you're going to have to respect each other more and respect your relationship regardless of where it goes. Don't go tell Susie about your escapade last Saturday night with your boyfriend from the office.
Y'all don't talk about if his dick's a baby arm. Don't talk about because that's what I would do. I would be like, girl. Couldn't walk for a week. That's not office appropriate.
No. It's not water cooler conversation.
But
you can't. And it's fun to talk about sex with your friends or whatever, but just save that for someone who's not in your office. Because no matter if they
sometimes you're friends with your coworkers.
You're friends with your coworkers. And if you say, Susie, please don't tell anybody, they're going to go tell somebody. It is not
they're
human
gonna
nature. They're
going to get drunk at that Christmas party.
Yep. Yep.
That holiday party.
People will find out. People will find out. And so you have to really create boundaries for your relationship. Okay. The other thing is, do not take naked pictures of you guys together.
Oh, Lord.
Because that shit is out there forever.
That shit is out there forever.
It's out there forever. And I don't know who else is going to see it, but you never know what is going to be out there. And you both worked at ABC Company.
Yep.
Just don't do it.
I will
don't
say,
do it.
Unless you look like Chris Hemsworth, everybody needs to see you. You know, when you're 80, you're going to regret. You're going to be so happy that...
You have that captured in time.
Yeah,
forever.
I feel like if you're Chris Hemsworth, we want your dick pics. But yeah, I agree. No, really, but that's
right.
People do that, and that's not.
And you never know what's going to happen with that information. You have to be very careful, and that goes on. You know, pictures, social media. You just have to be careful.
You know, I have another. Suggestion I just came up with myself. Don't use any type of work correspondence to talk about your relationship.
Genius.
Don't email. Even if you're going out on a date that night, don't put it in an email in your work emails.
They will find it on their server.
Keep it in your Gmail. Text one another.
Yep.
That's it.
Great. I love that one.
That's a good one. I just thought
you're
of that.
Good.
Holly
you
Kaplan.
Could write your own guide.
I could. It'd be called Sucking the Dick Click.
That's much more of a catchy title.
How to get ahead, ladies.
Literally.
That's good. I didn't even think of that.
That's good. That was fun. Yeah. It has multiple meanings.
Multiple meanings. So, because you mentioned this, so you really think if you're crushing on a coworker, it's just not the time.
Ugh.
So, I mean, but... Here's the deal, and this is from someone who's given advice to a lot of people. Holly Kaplan, not a lot of them take it because people do what they want to do.
They especially when you're hot for somebody.
Yeah, you can't see straight. You can't see straight. So we've already said that if you have a crush on someone in your office, now is not the time. However, if you're gonna do it,
take it outside.
So it's still the take it outside.
Take it outside.
When you said earlier, like go to Starbucks and ask them to go to Starbucks at 2 o'clock on a Saturday, do you propose that as like a friend thing, or do you even propose that as a date?
I would propose it.
It'd be like, hey Jerry.
Yeah.
Hey Jerry, I just want to know if you have some time this weekend. I just want to talk to you about something non work related. Or does that sound too? I'm not good at this.
I would say go for the date in a nice way. And that way you know it's reciprocated, so they don't feel obligated as your friend to go. I would say, hey, you want to go meet for coffee Saturday at 2? And it's a yes or no.
Okay.
I would keep it simple.
Okay.
See what happens. Yeah. And if you think that the crush is reciprocated and the person backs out, you're like, okay, maybe I get it. Maybe it's not reciprocated. But if they say, yeah, I'll do it, let's do it. Could have a different result. And this sounds so old school, and I'm from New Orleans, and I'm all about the alcohol, but I would keep the alcohol out of the first couple of minutes.
That's advice for life.
Because
I can't tell you how many times I ended up in somebody's bedroom with cherry-flavored lube all over me and wondering why I made these decisions.
How did this happen? But you don't want the coyote ugly experience. Especially not from somebody you work with.
No, you do not. So that is a good guideline, period.
Well, if we can follow it, that's a different thing. You know, saying it and doing it are two different things.
That's true.
But it's a guideline.
So you're in a relationship now, but it's not work related. So you don't work.
We knew each other. Yeah.
So do you have you, since you wrote the book, are men just as interested to talk to you as women, do you find? Or like where?
They're scared of it. They don't want to talk about it. Even the men I'm close to.
Really?
They don't want to talk about it. It makes them uncomfortable. But typically, they've just looked at the book cover and they haven't read the book. I'm like, dude, you know me. Read the book. It's not one-sided. This is, I take accountability. I talk about what I learned and my mistakes. I'm like, mm-hmm. read the book. There's no reason to be afraid. I praise men in it. If anything, I wish they'd read it so they'd understand it.
Oh, for sure. I'm interested in this. How, if men want to be a proactive man, how do they bring up in a workplace, especially if they're a manager or something like that?
Right.
I think we're all getting rules of how to be respectful and things like
which
that.
Which is
new and nice. But I don't know. I haven't seen a lot about how, if you're a man, you bring up the conversation of Me Too, or even sometimes like open the door to provide a safe place for a woman to feel like she can report something to you.
Right.
Maybe that has been talked about that, but I haven't seen a lot of that.
You're right. It's being talked about, but there's not been a lot of activity around it.
It's more just like, men, don't do this. Men, don't do this. Say, that's what I feel like I'm, but I.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like there's, and maybe we're not there yet, but I'm just wondering, is there a space for men? This is how you provide a space for women to talk about this.
That needs to come from the company.
Well, if somebody maybe is listening to a company right now and hearing this, and or their company doesn't, and they just want to be a proactive manager and do this.
Which would be awesome.
What are some, like, either things they could set up or things they could say or conversations they could have that would make women and men, but a lot of women feel comfortable stepping up and speaking out?
I think it's about having male allies. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a boardroom and having been the only woman several mm-hmm. times in the boardroom, if I say something, typically sounds so bad. I'm not playing victim. I'm ignored or my voice doesn't matter as much. Having a man step in and say, Holly has something to say, and kind of stepping up for you is what could make the difference. So men have to be more aware of when this stuff happens, because they don't always realize it because they're so used to doing things their way. The change, there's change in it for them too.
And it's not fault necessarily on men in that, because I know the difference. I was very lucky in that I've always been gay, obviously, but until, quote unquote, I came out, I was treated as a heterosexual male. So I had that privilege.
Interesting.
And then when I came out, it was gone.
Really?
Yeah, it was gone because I wasn't a heterosexual male anymore. So I was treated differently. I moved to a state where, you know, people were getting married and it was taken away. And also, like, people would, you know, I would meet people before and they would think I was gay just because it's pretty, unless you're fucking headless, or you're one of my ex-girlfriends, you would know. But as soon as I would say something like, well, I remember this very much in high school. Like, guys would think I was weird or whatever. And then, like, my girlfriend would come over and they would see me with my girlfriend and immediately they would be comfortable around me. Immediately. And I then knew they wouldn't, like, bully me.
Yeah.
They wouldn't tease me. I also knew that they would see me as an equal.
Once they saw that you had a woman.
Once they saw that I had a girlfriend. But then when I came out, and this was still, I was 19 in Texas.
Uh-huh.
Once I came out, I didn't have that status anymore because I was out as gay.
Oh,
so
wow.
So a lot of them did not
treat
me as their equal.
That's so
interesting. So I saw the double, and it was like
That's what it is. That's what it's like. It's very, well, I didn't come
similar,
out, but it's a similar.
Oh, I think everybody comes out, though, about something. If you're... I've always said that we all have a coming out, and whether it's women having to come out about what's happening in the workplace, it's very similar. Very, very similar.
It is. I agree with that.
So, and why did I fucking talk about that?
Because you're talking about different things that men could do.
Oh, so what are some... So, yeah. So, I love that, because even if, you know... So, just the fact of being an ally. Like saying... You know, let's say when
it's not just up to women, it's up to the men,
yeah,
too, to
like
help
maybe
this.
If you had sent that email and said, hey, Bob, I think I would be great for this position, and maybe Bob is kind of a dick, but maybe Adam saw it, and Adam says, oh, I think Holly would be great
exactly.
for this position.
It needs to be that type of support,
mm-hmm.
because if you don't put it in front of them, they'll never really recognize it, and it will never change.
Yeah, exactly.
They have to recognize it, yeah.
Should men say the things that, like, but should men at work, but then I don't know if it's inappropriate, should they say to any women coworkers, like, should they say, hey, if you ever feel uncomfortable with anybody else in the office, you can always come to me? talk about that?
I think that would be amazing, and that would be a big, big step. I've never had a man say that, ever, ever. I've had women say it, because mm-hmm. we, you know, we've supported each other through this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. But I've never had a man say it. That would be a big deal.
Uh-oh, the boyfriend's home, right in the middle of the show. We just got some pretty.
We were talking about you.
We just got some pretty right in the
yes,
middle.
Yes, we
look
did.
Look at him, that smile.
How you doing?
Oh, look at him. Go in the back, baby, and then I'll come back later. That sounds like
nice
I'm being nasty.
Nice to see you.
I'm not, everybody. We're almost done. I know. I know. He's ugly,
cute.
Isn't he? Just so ugly.
Precious.
So I know. He's beautiful.
Eye candy. Hello.
I know. Okay. But, you know, sorry, we both got, Holly and I both got distracted. But, you know, it's so, and then having him in my life, too, though, that is difference of, like, experiencing, like, walking into a restaurant and everybody stares at us and me thinking they can't tell they were gay, that we're walking in, I realize we're walking into, like, an all-white restaurant and they're staring at him. So it's like, I definitely get, like, how people, I think that's so important what you just said, because it's just, he has me, other people I know that experience discrimination, they have
yeah.
peers, and it really is so important for, I don't like to say the word majority, but it's true, men, even though, well, actually, men are not the majority in this country, however, or in the world, I think even, the men are treated
yes.
as the most important kind of decision
yes.
maker. In
right.
the, so
right.
they are, quote unquote, the majority, or they're the top of the food chain, so to speak. But we need that support of the quote unquote majorities to support the minorities.
Right.
We have to have that.
We have to. We're not
women
gonna get
cannot
anywhere.
Do this alone.
No, we no.
They
we
cannot.
Can't.
I mean, there is a lot of them, so they can probably do a lot without men. But it's the same thing of, like, we wouldn't have gay marriage if it wasn't for straight people that decided they needed to speak out about
right.
that.
Right. It's the same thing. It's that
it's
alliance.
The same. We wouldn't have what's happening with the Black Lives Matter move if we didn't have, you know, white people
right.
saying this matters to me.
Right. It's support.
So I love what you said of just of men, the best thing you can do is just support some. And for women, I think for women to say to their other coworkers.
Right.
Because you said that you experienced some kind of oppression with other women.
Oh, yeah. That women that were supposed to help correct
mm-hmm.
problems that did not
mm-hmm.
correct the problems. But something, I wanted to add something to what you were saying. There's something called a bystander intervention.
Mm.
So if you have an issue at work,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it's gender discrimination or sexual harassment or whatever it is, and you're not comfortable going to HR, you have one of your buddies go, someone who supports you. And that way you guys can rally together. Or someone to go
they
with you.
They would go and say, hey,
yeah.
I saw this happen to Holly.
Right.
I just wanted to let you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. She might not feel comfortable speaking out, but I'm telling you, I saw this happen. So, again, that's more of an alliance and a system to help give it more strength.
Should people approach the person that they feel like is discriminating them, or should they always go to HR?
Oh, boy, that's a good question, because I've done both. I've gone to HR.
I don't think some people, because I feel like some people, like, you know, I feel like some people I know, some of the old school, like, you just work it out yourselves. You just work
right.
it out.
Right.
Which, again, that's.
I got bullied more. If I went right
yeah, exactly.
to the, if I went right to the head of the dick click,
mm-hmm.
that's a mental picture. And I brought up my issue. I usually got bullied more.
Mm.
It was like. I mean,
like,
I know you're
oh,
supposed.
Oh, Holly, don't be so sensitive.
Right, right.
You're fine. You're making a big deal out of this.
Or he would give me a hard time around my other colleagues, do something to shame me or make me feel dumb. So that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
So, but potentially, it sounds like if you have an HR department, that's where you need to go.
Yeah, that's where you need to go, and you need to obviously have everything documented, talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Bring in a bystander if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
I hope no one has to get to the spot.
And when you say documented, for some people that don't know, is that just have it written down or have picture, like
right.
or save emails? Is
right.
that what you
save
mean?
Save emails and bullet point your issues. You're going to need to have documentation. I hate to say it, but you're going to have everything written down. And the beautiful thing about that is that when you talk to HR about it, you can take the emotion out of it. It's still highly emotional,
mm-hmm.
but gender discrimination, sexual harassment, have your points out and available so you are ready and on fire when you deliver what you need to talk about.
Mm. That's actually an important piece too. It is, you can make such better headway in things that are emotionally upsetting to you if you can take the emotion out of it when you talk about it.
Yeah.
At least. And so somebody can hear just kind of the facts of the situation, right, and not the emotion.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do.
It's hard to do.
It's very hard to do.
It's hard. Yeah. Mm. It's difficult.
You got my mind spinning. Sorry. Holly, I love it. We can always go longer than I say I'm going to go on this show, okay, but this was interesting. So, like, so what's next for you as far as, like, what's next for you?
What's next for me is I've started the next little guide.
Oh.
Called When the Dick is a Chick.
Oh.
Get it?
Yeah,
like,
get it.
The female-female dynamic in the workplace, because I feel like we need to talk about that. And for that, I haven't had a lot of experience in that. So I'm interviewing other women about what it's been like for them to work with other women and the do's and the don'ts. So another little guide for that dynamic. And then I'm doing more speaking, and I have my blog, my website, and I really just want women to interact and talk about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So they have a safe space to talk about it. My website, I'm sure you were going to ask me.
I was going to ask you, but tell everybody where it is.
It's www.hollykaplan.com.
That's C-A-P-L-A-N.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah. C.com. Hollykaplan.com. And please.
That link will be in the show notes, everybody.
Thank you.
You can just click on that.
Please come on. Talk about stuff with me, blog with me, and bring up topics that you want to discuss. That's what I want to do.
You know, that is the beauty of things like websites and Facebook. I mean, we get a lot of shit from it, but it's also beautiful that it does give an outlet for people to just get support.
Right. Just get support. I've only had this blog for, like, 6 months, but it's been great to see how women have supported each other through it and say, I've had that happen, or I've had that happen. You know, it's good. It makes you feel like you're not alone.
Yeah.
I know blogs do that, but it's nice to see it at this level.
No, it's nice to see it. All right, Holly Kaplan, we're at Chatting Maddie Questions.
Oh, my
God.
How
do you feel about that?
Good. I have no idea what to expect.
No,
so I'm excited.
No idea.
No.
You have such pretty hair.
Oh, you're so nice.
No, you do. You have really pretty hair. Okay, Chatting Maddie. I got to remember them. I usually write them down, but I didn't. I've only done 140 shows, Holly. I should know. Chatting Maddie, number one. Oh, yeah, I remember this now. What is your most memorable childhood smell?
Childhood smell. Mm-hmm.
What is your most memorable childhood smell?
Boiled crawfish.
Is that a good smell?
It is a fabulous smell. Boiled crawfish. Amen. Hands down.
So is your family all from New Orleans?
Yeah.
How long have they lived there?
Their entire lives. They've been there their entire lives.
And their grandparents were from there too?
Yeah, my grandparents were too, and before that, immigrants from Russia and Poland that came in to the ship channel in New Orleans, yeah.
So does your mom, do they make good Cajun food? Or?
Yeah, we do kosher Cajun, which is kind of funny.
Kosher
I'm
Cajun?
Joking. Oh, yeah.
I was like, really?
Jews that live in the South.
So that's funny.
They can cook really well. My mother's a great cook. They know how to do it.
Wow.
Yes, lots of Cajun seasoning.
Yeah, I just realized people forget New Orleans is older than our country.
Yes,
it's old.
It's
our 300-year anniversary next year.
You're right. You would know. You just went there.
I did. So, I'd have to go back. Okay, Chatting Maddie number... Okay, I'm trying to remember. Chatting Maddie number two. What would be the name... Maybe you already wrote it. I was going to say, what would be the name of your memoir? I mean, you have a book, but...
Surviving the Dick Click. That's it.
Because it was such a huge part of your life.
Yeah. It was my coming out.
Yeah, it was your coming out. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Okay, Chatting Maddie number three. What is the best piece of advice that you wished you'd taken earlier in life?
Gosh, stand up for yourself. And I say that because I was taught in the South to be compliant, demure, I wouldn't say quiet, but just kind of roll with it, especially as a female in the South. And I was not vocal and did not stand up for myself in so many different occasions that I didn't really learn how to handle conflict until recent years.
Mm.
And I love my Southern upbringing. I do. But when someone said, stand up for yourself, I really wish I would have.
Mm. It's so true, though. I think a lot, especially in the South, but especially for women too, compliant is such a...
It's so important.
A word that gets put on them to be compliant.
Yeah.
And it's just... It boggles the mind sometimes.
Yeah. We're supposed to be nice and quiet and shake your head and not be, you know, confrontational. And
Get along. Yeah. So, okay. Chatty Manny. I just had in my head. Chatty Manny. Blah, 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 I can't say the word. Chatty Manny number four is... I know listeners are screaming at me right now because they remember the question. So I
asked
yelling
you... You're yelling it back
I asked to you right now. What day would be your Groundhog Day? So what day was such a good day that you were like, oh man, I could do that day over and over and over and over again?
That's a big question.
I didn't give you time to prepare this and you got to think of it. It's okay. It's a podcast. We can have silence and just look at each other. I'm fine with that.
Was my big...
Yeah, you think. I swear to God, my friend day. Karen Cole, if you're listening, Holly has like the same color eyes that you do. It's crazy. You have like Linda Carter blue eyes.
Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah, they're pretty.
Oh, you're sweet. I like that.
They're Linda Carter blue.
I'm still trying to think of what my big
to
go
think
back
of Groundhog.
And think about what would I do again.
I used to ask the question, the weirdest place you had sex, but I feel like that's not appropriate for this show. So let's stick with Groundhog
Day. Yeah, okay. We'll stick with Groundhog Day. We will stick with Groundhog Day for sure. Okay, I know what day it was.
Okay.
It was recent. It was when I got to go to New York City and be on the local show, Cheddar, and talk about the Dick Click for the first time because it was right after Harvey Weinstein.
Mm.
It was during Harvey Weinstein. And it was a beautiful fall day in New York. And I went to their little studio and I got to talk about something that I was passionate about.
Mm.
And I felt like I wanted to make a difference in my conversation with them. And after that little clip, it was very short, like 4 minutes, I went and sat outside, which is like a park area, and just enjoyed the weather and watched people and just did some people watching. And I was like, wow, I really feel good about what we're trying to do. Mm. And I would go back and do that day all over again.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that.
It was fun.
Last Chatty Matty, when are you most inspired?
Oh, by my daughter.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's such a trite answer, but no. She inspires me every day because every day I think about, you know, what's important to her and how I can continue to pave the path for her.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing what I'm trying to do now, I know it's going to be better for her and her future. So that is what inspires me because I don't want her to have to put up with the shit that I put up with.
Mm.
I don't want her to have to deal with it. So that inspires me.
Mm. She got a little teary on that one, everybody, Holly Chapman. I was listening, or where was I? And it hit me. Talking about women being compliant is that basically, it was like a little girl, like a boy had like pinched her or something in school.
Yeah, we were told they liked us.
Yeah.
We were taught that if he pulls your ponytail or pops your bra strap, mm-hmm. that he likes you and it's good.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like a little element, I mean, literally like a 6-year-old kid. And the girl started not, the teacher saw it and the girl wasn't going to say anything.
Right.
And the teacher used that as an opportunity of like, no, when someone does something that hurts you or affects you, you tell them no. And then you come to me or you come, and it was literally this lesson of, and she's like saying, I want you to promise me that anytime somebody comes up that you will never be scared to not say something again.
That's a fabulous thing.
But it's such like, but we think about this just happens in work, but we don't realize that we, you know, I recognize at a very young age, like being effeminate, like if somebody made fun of me or said I walked like a girl, that because no ally ever said, hey, Matt, if somebody ever says that, my parents did. But it's different when your parents say something than like a teacher or a peer even.
Right.
I think that's what's something that you said that's so beautiful about the way we can support one another. Yeah, it's about managers supporting people that work under them, but it's also about coworkers supporting other coworkers.
We have to.
Saying peer-to-peer support.
Right.
Because sometimes we don't feel that in our group of friends. We feel like our friends even might make fun of us or roll their eyes if
right.
we report something.
Right, right. It teaches you to be a better friend, too.
Yeah, it does.
I think
really,
it does.
Really
like,
does.
You have really honest relationships with people.
Yeah.
forces you to do that.
Uh-huh.
And you made me think of something else, and then I'll stop talking. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you were fine.
You were talking about
crawfish. We're talking about the girl.
No,
we're talking about teaching consent.
About men. I lost it.
Oh, man.
Shoot.
Talking about men supporting other women. Talked about...
I don't remember what it was. I lost it.
Chris Hemsworth, and if you look like him...
That's what made me lose my thought.
Send me a dick pic.
Right. Yeah. Shoot, I forgot what it was. It's all right. Terrible.
You know what? We'll tweet it out. We'll Instagram a video of it. It'll get back out to people.
I'll think of it.
I think this is going to be the last time I have you on my show, Holly Kaplan.
When I have a vodka, I'll remember what it was. When I have three vodkas, I will not remember what it was.
You will not remember what it was. But so tell everybody again. I know you said it already, but tell everybody where they can find you. HollyKaplan.com,
HollyKaplan.com.
With a C, everybody. That's going to be in the show notes.
With the C. And I also have a Facebook page.
Mm.
It is called Surviving the Dick Click. And
QU on click, everybody.
QU on click.
I'm
going to
put that in the link in the show notes as well. And so Surviving Dick Click on Facebook, that's not only a page, but is that a place where people, like whether... Because some people go to blogs, but can people also go to Facebook and use that as a way of just supporting
absolutely.
One another and having conversations?
Absolutely, and women do that.
Great.
So they can do it that way too. And of course on Twitter, Dick Click Survival.
Yes.
And Instagram, I can't remember, so we'll just have to put that down with everything else.
I think I friended you. I think that's more personal though.
You think so? It might
be. I saw like a picture of you and your daughter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, y'all can, if y'all want to follow Holly's life, if you're a stalker, I don't know. Okay, so, and the book, Surviving the Dick Click, like a girl's guide to surviving the male-dominated corporate world, is available...
Amazon. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Get it on your Kindle.
You can go to my website and buy it. Well,
is there an audiobook of this yet?
No, but that would be a fun thing to
do.
You
have a nice voice. You should just record the audio of that.
You're nice. That would be fun.
Or you could hire someone to do it if you wanted to. But you could just do it. I know a lot of people do voiceover that do audiobook stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that would be a blast.
But yeah, you can record. You can go into a studio.
Then I get to do a lot more cussing and stuff.
Yeah, because it's in the book. Yeah, because it's... Holly talks like me, y'all. We truth talk, but we...
We truth talk.
We grew up in the South.
We like to talk about dicks, so, you know.
Yeah, we we do. We like to talk about when they're appropriate and when they're not. And that's what we did today, everybody. Okay, so you can find all things Holly on the show notes of the show. And as always, you know, everybody, I love it when y'all leave a review on this podcast. It's very helpful to me. It helps get the word out. If you like this episode, share it. Tell a friend about it on your social media. This could be a really great way of like, hey, you got some female coworkers. Maybe you carpool together, whatever. Be like, this could be a good way. Oh, I just like this podcast. Could be a way to maybe... start a conversation about how do we support one another in our office by, you know, listen to this podcast. Maybe not at work. I don't know if we're the work appropriate, you know, maybe on lunch break with the ladies. But still, entertainment is always a great way to talk about, I think, important issues. That's what I love about what we do. So if you leave a review and leave comments, I appreciate that. And sugars. You know, and if you have any questions, go to DearMattieShow.com, MATTIE, and ask your advice questions, and I will get them answered, sugars. So, Holly Kaplan, thank you for being on the show
today.
This was a lot of fun. Like I said, I think I'll definitely have you back on again.
Oh, you're so nice.
I'm not a fortune teller.
I'll come back out anytime.
Sugar, LA is here, everybody.
LA is here.
All right, and for the rest of you, do something for someone this week, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye. Sugars, there we are. We are full steam ahead. I can't believe it's midway through April. We've got another new episode coming up next week. I'll be sure to have that for you. Be sure to check out, if you listen to TBT Time, you listen to Jake and I do Riverdale. Riverdale did not air this week, but we have a special interview with Cody Kearsley, who plays Moose on Riverdale. Yes, Kevin's kind of boyfriend, I don't know. Anyway, they haven't decided what they are, y'all, but Cody definitely knows who he is. He's a really great guy, really great actor. He's so cute. Inside and out, just
really kind of just an amazingly beautiful person. It's really, really nice. So Jake and I had a great time talking to him, and hopefully y'all enjoy it. It's like a short little 30-minute interview, and you can check that out at TVT Time. Sugars, you know the drill. I love it when you leave a review. I really appreciate that. If you like this podcast, please review it on iTunes or Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you listen to podcasts. Really, it really helps if you just put hopefully 5 stars, but any amount of stars, but also write something. It really helps bump up the podcast and the Apple ratings. And Sugar, tell a friend about the show. I really, again, I so appreciate that as well. When you share it on your social media, you tweet about it, or you literally just tell a coworker, hey, while you're doing your data entry work that's boring, you should listen to this podcast. I think you'd like it. All right, Sugars. Well, that's enough of me. I hope you all have a great weekend, and I'll see you next week. All right. Love you. Bye.